Welcome to installment 57 of Sefer Mitzvahs from the Rambam. Today's commandment is positive commandment 168, the commandment to dwell in a sukkah on the holiday of Sukkot. Maimonides quotes that the mitzvah to dwell in a sukkah derived from the book of Leviticus, chapter 23, verse 42. The verse states that during these 7 days, meaning the 7 days of the holiday of Sukkot, you must dwell in Sukkot, in the sukkah, in the hut, so that in future generations, says God, you will know that I had the Jewish people dwell in sukkahs when I took them out of the land of Egypt. We therefore learn that the sukkah indicates the clouds of glory, that what were the sukkahs that the Jews dwelt in the time of the coming out of Egypt were the clouds of glory, the Anan HaYakovod, which miraculously surrounded the Jewish people and protected them from the elements that could have harmed them in the desert. The Talmud also mentions an opinion of Rav Akiva that literally the sukkahs were huts, that the Jews actually dwelt during one time in their period of the Exodus from Egypt in huts in the desert. But it's regularly accepted that this is referring to the clouds of glory, that our sukkahs are a remembrance of these clouds. Therefore, when we dwell in a sukkah, it reminds us of the trust of the Jewish people, that after coming out of Egypt, they had complete trust, even having no physical means available to protect themselves from the elements and going into a desolate and dangerous desert without any guidance and with little food. They placed their trust nevertheless in their Creator and believed that He would go and protect them in every way, shape, and form. In fact, this is what happened, that the clouds of glory came and protected them physically. The manna came, the man, and went and gave them their nourishment. And so too, the well of Miriam accompanied them to go and give them their water. Therefore, we come today and demonstrate our trust that just as in those days the Jews were protected from everything that could have harmed them, so too today our true trust and our true faith is in God. This is one of the reasons given for the fact that we do not dwell in a sukkah in the spring. If we wanted to commemorate the release from Egypt, we should go and make our sukkah in the same time they had their sukkah. Since they came out after Passover in the springtime, we should make our sukkah in that time as well. However, if a person would suddenly go and move into a sukkah in the spring, what would everybody think? What would everyone say? They would think that it's a nice time to go and get outside, and it's a nice climate to go and relocate and bring your whole house to the outside, and therefore they're building a sukkah for their own personal enjoyment. Therefore, to demonstrate that our dwelling in the sukkah is not for our own personal pleasure, but to demonstrate our trust and our faith in God, the mitzvah was given to us in the fall, when it's not all that nice to go outside, and certainly not as nice as the spring. It's mentioned in the code of Jewish law that one should actually have two intentions when fulfilling the mitzvah of sukkah. The first is, as we mentioned, to keep in mind that we're commemorating the clouds of glory which went and accompanied the Jewish people after the Exodus. The other intention is more simple, but we are intending to fulfill the commandment of God to dwell in a sukkah for these 7 days of Sukkot. The mitzvah of a sukkah is unique in many ways. The most striking is in the actual form of the sukkah. This is really the only mitzvah which totally encompasses a person. Other mitzvahs have varying degrees of connection with the person. A lulav, for example, is held in the person's hand. A shofar is actually entering the person in a way, is entering his ears, and the sound enters the person's being and enters the person's consciousness. A mitzvah which involves eating, such as the matzah, actually enters the person's body and becomes physically part of him. And these all have different means, different ways of connection to the person. The sukkah, however, encompasses everybody equally, and it doesn't only affect one part of the body. It infects the entire body, that the entire body from head to toe is totally engulfed and totally encompassed in the mitzvah. This total encompassing effect of the mitzvah is also indicated in the Talmud that it must encompass all areas of a person's life. The Talmud says that one must make it ke'ein tidurei. One must dwell in a sukkah just like he dwells in his house during the year. Everything he would normally do in a house, he should do in the sukkah. If one normally eats in the house, he should eat in the sukkah. Sleeping in the house, sleep better in the sukkah. Where would you go for relaxation? In your house? Relax in the sukkah. And therefore your sukkah becomes your house for that period of time. An interesting story is related to the Mittler Rebbe, the second Lubavitcher Rebbe, that it was his custom not to sleep in the sukkah, even though the mitzvah of sleeping in a sukkah is something you would normally do. If you would normally sleep in your house, you should sleep in a sukkah. They asked the Mittler Rebbe, why do you not want to go and sleep in the sukkah? And he explained that in Chassidic philosophy there are many different types of godly revelation which are described. A very high form of revelation is Seviv Kol Olmin, the encompassing light of Hashem. Called the encompassing light is because it's so high that it cannot normally be internalized by a person. It's so high it always remains somewhat above his normal capacity. The Mittler Rebbe says, which mitzvah of the Torah most indicates this idea of Seviv Kol Olmin, of the encompassing light of God? This high light, said the Mittler Rebbe, is most present in the sukkah, that the sukkah itself encompasses you. Says the Mittler Rebbe, in the presence of such a holy light, how could one go to sleep? And therefore, he couldn't go to sleep in the sukkah. This concept that the sukkah totally engulfs and totally encompasses a person leads us to a very interesting explanation for one of the reasons of the mitzvah of dwelling in a sukkah. When a person relocates their entire body and their entire being into a mitzvah, this is a very striking reminder of the Exodus from Egypt. There are actually many mitzvahs, many commandments which are meant to remind us of the Exodus from Egypt. But when one takes his entire being and switches it to a new place, this is a great impression, makes a great impression on the person of the actual Exodus. And therefore a person actually lives through and is reminded of the wondrous miracles which happened to us in the land of Egypt. And therefore, when we come later to the rest of the year to fulfill other mitzvahs, other commandments of the Torah, we'll be more impressed. Could you imagine having seen the miracles on the coming out of Egypt, you yourself with your own eyes? We experience this in a way by dwelling in a sukkah. And therefore the dwelling in the sukkah strengthens us and gives us more of an encouragement and more of a strength to go and fulfill the other commandments with greater care and greater enthusiasm. And the explanation does not stop there. That since we will be observing all of the commandments with better care, we will also become better fit, better vehicles, better receptacles in order to receive the blessings that God has meant for us. And this itself is God's will. What does he intend to go and accomplish with us dwelling in a sukkah? That since God wants to go and give the Jewish people great blessings, tremendous brachas, he does this in a way that we should earn it as well. And by making us dwell in the sukkah, he will inspire us to reach a higher level where we will improve ourselves to the point where we will deserve and be earning these blessings. The actual construction of the sukkah is considered itself to be a mitzvah. And therefore, immediately following Yom Kippur, Jews all over the world have a custom of beginning construction, or at least speaking about the beginning of construction of the sukkah, to go and begin the construction as soon as possible. In fact, it's been mentioned that perhaps the Shechianu, the blessing said to express a person's joy upon completion of a mitzvah which comes only from time to time, perhaps this bracha, Shechianu, should be recited upon the completion of the building of the sukkah. However, we say the blessing Shechianu only upon the actual completion of the mitzvah. And the mitzvah is only complete not only after we build the sukkah, but after we dwell in it, in the holiday of sukkahs and make kiddush. And therefore the Shechianu is said during the kiddush of sukkahs. The main part, halachically speaking, of the sukkah is in fact the tzchach. Upon looking at it, we are more impressed perhaps immediately by the walls. But the real sukkah, so to speak, is the tzchach, is the covering on the roof. For this reason, since the tzchach is the main part of the sukkah, we should look at the tzchach when we go and say our blessing, Leishev V'sukkah, in the sukkah. For this reason, the sukkah cannot be more than 20 amas, or approximately 30 feet in height. Because if it is more than 20 amas in height, a person would not normally notice what's on the ceiling, what's on the roof. And since we are meant to go and notice the tzchach, it should not be higher than that. Many laws are given of the requirements for what the tzchach must consist of. Three general rules. And first of all, the tzchach must be something which grows. Therefore, one could not use leather or anything else which does not grow from the ground in order for it to be used as tzchach. Secondly, it has to be something which is no longer connected to the ground, that it is tolush. Therefore, one could not take leaves or branches of a tree which is still connected to the ground and merely drape it over the top of your sukkah and use that for the tzchach. It must be cut off. A third requirement is the tzchach cannot be mekabel tumo, or fit to go and accept the ritual impurity, as we know that there were laws of purity and impurity, tumah and tada, in effect at the times of the temple in Jerusalem. If something would at that time have been possibly become impure, this is something which is now invalid to be used as tzchach, as a covering for the sukkah. Therefore, the food items which people are accustomed to go and hang from the sukkah are not even though they grow from the ground and they are no longer connected to the ground, are not valid to be used as schach. This schach put on the roof of the sukkah has to go and provide more than 50% shade to the sukkah. We see an interesting discussion in the Talmud in Tractate Sukkah of the principle of diffusion of light. The Talmud says that what would be if you look on the floor of the sukkah and see that it's exactly 50% shade and 50% light? And we know that we need to have majority shade for a sukkah. And the Talmud says that the sukkah is valid. Why is that? Because if on the ground you see that it's 50%, that it's exactly even, we know that up there on the top of the sukkah, on the tzchach, it must be more shade than light. This is because the light, as it comes down to the ground, diffuses and spreads out to a greater area. And therefore we know that since it's 50% light over on the floor of the sukkah, that it must be less than 50% up where the tzchach itself is. The sukkah itself has a minimum size. In fact, the height of a sukkah is 10 tefachim, or 10 handbreadths, a handbreadth being approximately 8 centimeters. The width of a sukkah is 7 by 7 handbreadths, or 49 square tefachim. Where if one can visualize such a sukkah, we would see that a whole body would not even be able to fit in such a sukkah. Who would build such a sukkah? We hear stories, however, that in Russia, when the Jews were persecuted and not allowed to go and build sukkahs, people used to take portable sukkahs, and in order to be able to fulfill the mitzvah, would risk their lives, actually, and risk their jobs, and risk their health and their families by going and sticking their head and their shoulders and the majority of their body into such a tiny sukkah, saying the blessing for the sukkah and therefore fulfilling the mitzvah. We find in the Talmudic discussion of the size of a sukkah many interesting mathematical calculations. In fact, one can become very knowledgeable in trigonometry and geometry just by learning the Talmud's discussions of the size of a sukkah. There are many people who are exempt from dwelling in the sukkah. Women are exempt from dwelling in a sukkah as they are exempt from all commandments which are time-bound, or a mitzvah shehazman groma. Since dwelling in a sukkah is not a mitzvah in effect the entire year, a woman is exempt from dwelling in the sukkah. However, if she decides to dwell in the sukkah, being an Ashkenazi, a woman would be able to go and say the blessing on dwelling in a sukkah, since she certainly is allowed to go and dwell in the sukkah. Other people who have difficulty dwelling in the sukkah are also exempt. People that are sick or for other reasons are uncomfortable dwelling in the sukkah are exempt from dwelling there. The Zohar discusses the statement of the elder Rav Hamnuna. The Rav Hamnuna Sava discussed the fact that shushvinim, that guests, would come to his sukkah every day throughout the holiday of sukkah. The first day, Abraham would come and visit his sukkah. The second day, Isaac would come and visit his sukkah. The third day, Jacob would come and visit his sukkah. And so on and so forth. Therefore, the custom has developed that many people go and say a special prayer, a special nusach, for the shushvinim, for the guests who come every single day. As it has been explained that really on every day all of these shushvinim, all of these guests come. But only on each day one of the shushvinim is the head guest, is the most prominent one. Even those people that do not say the prayer have a custom of discussing the tremendous milas, the tremendous qualities of the particular guest for that particular day. I'd like to conclude today's mitzvah with the statement that the entire Jewish people, Ra'uim Leishev B'Sukkah Achas, we are all fit to go and dwell in one sukkah. That in the days of Mashiach we can imagine a tremendous sukkah, which will encompass every single Jew. That we can all go and dwell there together in sukkah shleimecha, in the sukkahs of your peace, of the peace of God, with the Messianic era. Thank you for calling the Sefer HaMitzvahs, and we hope to hear from you tomorrow.